Thank you for joining us on Warrior Women Speak. I'm Judge Rosemarie Aquilina, author of Just Watch Me, and I'm joined with my co-host, Sherry Botwin, LCSW, social worker and trauma specialist, and author of Thriving After Trauma, Stories of Living and Healing. We have created this podcast for your enjoyment and so that we all can talk about our issues and learn together about how to deal with trauma and those things that spring up in our everyday life. Please join us for every episode and let us know what you want to talk about. Now for the show. Sherry, when we left off last week, we were talking about grieving and trauma. Actually, it's called, I think, formally, because I'm not the trained one, you are, traumatic grief. And we left off talking actually about me and my grandfather and how to talk to kids, kind of to recognize that they're grieving too, and not to just think they're little people that get over it, they don't understand, because they really do at every age. But I think we also need to talk about the symptoms of traumatic grief. And I don't know all of them. I know from experience some of them, but and I know I have friends who this happens to. They are very preoccupied with death and the deceased, whoever died. And that's what they're doing, is they're living in this world, but with them as if they're still present. And then they experience pain, diseases, whatever that person died of. Suddenly they become ill, or they become so ill because they're thinking, oh, now I can join them, but it's not their time yet. And then they cause harm or to themselves with using drugs, alcohol, cutting. They feel hopeless. They do things where they're longing for the deceased so badly that it disrupts their employment, their ability to go enjoy life, to meet with friends, to talk. Sometimes they hear voices. In front of me on the bench, I have many people who go out and take the anger that they feel, and they commit horrible offenses. And when I engage in, you know, what's happened here, this doesn't fit you, I learn that they're angry because they lost someone very important to them, and it's caused such trauma that they can't function.
So one of the ways people describe PTSD after traumatic loss is they feel like they've lost their minds. And that's kind of what you're describing, that feeling of like total shock, desperation, fear, almost like insanity. That's what you're describing. So I think it's important for people to understand that there's different ways people will process grief. There's different ways to do it. And for some people, when they lose somebody that they loved, especially in suddenly or way too soon, or even somebody that dies from a horrible disease, but they die young, it can be very comforting for people to talk to others who knew that person. That can really help. But I think one of the things that we should note today as we're talking about this stuff is, and you're describing it, sometimes you really need to get help. You know, I don't say to everybody, go to therapy, even though I think everybody should go to therapy, even though should's not the best way to say it. Everybody can benefit from therapy, but there are things that you want to pay attention to. So when we were thinking about coming back this week and talking, I wanted to just say to people, if it's been over a month, if it's been 6 weeks, and you're feeling just as awful as you felt the week that you lost your family member, go to therapy. If you can't function at work or at home, if you feel like I can't cook, I can't clean, if you're calling out of work, if you are, like you said, having nightmares, flashbacks, one thing that I've seen a lot is people will say to me, I can't get the image of so-and-so dying out of my brain. I keep going back to that room in the ICU and watching him or her take their last breaths. This is a normal thing that happens for people. But if you're continuing to have these images coming into your brain and it's been 4 to 6 weeks, you should go to therapy. If you're isolating and you're not wanting to be with people, and again, it's okay to need space. Everybody needs space. But if you don't want to see your friends anymore. If when they're texting you, you just say, I don't care, I don't want to talk to anybody, you should go to therapy. If you're experiencing suicidal thoughts, which some people will, because not necessarily because they want to not be alive, but because they can't tolerate being alive without the person that they lost, you should get help. If you feel like you're doing anything to avoid the reminder that that person has died, if you're avoiding places, if you're avoiding people, which again, when you think about loss, it's everywhere, especially at the beginning, there's reminders 100 times a day. If you're going to extraordinary levels to avoid those 100 million reminders, and it's been 4 to 6 weeks, go to therapy.
Even over focusing on that person in any way for it, 4 to 6 weeks. What about, okay, so my grandpa died when I was 17, I was 64. I probably should go, huh? Actually come to terms with it, but you know, it's interesting because at the time, no one recognized. I think what you're saying is really important, some of the signs, because no one recognized I wasn't eating, I wasn't sleeping. I did have a teacher who recognized it because I was on the pom-pom squad and I literally couldn't exercise. I could not get into formation. There were things that I just simply couldn't do. And she noticed that, oh my gosh, you know, this is a change. And she talked to me about, you know, what's going on. Yeah. And I told her, I said, my grandfather is the closest person to me and I can't handle it. I mean, I was literally in a fog and I felt confused and dazed and lonely and just like the world was going at a different pace than I was. I was fortunate because I'm really strong-willed. And so I sort of got myself out of it, but there's so many people who cannot do that. And they really need someone like you, a trauma therapist, to work through it for as long as it takes. Because again, like any other trauma that we've talked about over the last 3 years that we've been doing the show, there's no time limit on healing when you are going through any grief or traumatic grief or PTSD.
Well, and what you're saying is so important when you talk about how it was the teacher or the coach on the squad that noticed. This is where community becomes very important, because when I was talking about these two boys that lost their mom, their dad is going through something horrific and horrible. He may not be as awake in all this because he's going through a loss too. So for the teachers to be able to watch out for these boys or whoever knows them, the friends of Amanda, people who are a little bit more distant, to be able to notice if like you're saying, if they seem like they're shutting down and they're no longer participating. And it's to be expected when you lose somebody, you're not going to be yourself, obviously. But what you're saying is somebody in your world noticed that it was a little bit more, it could have turned into something much more if somebody didn't intervene and reach out and address what they were noticing with you. And I think that's so important. I think community at a time when there's a tragic loss is the most important thing. Families fall apart when they lose someone. And one of the things that we're going to talk about today is how some of these people who've had awful losses have found ways to channel their grief and turn it into something hopeful. But there's a lot of families that can't do that. They don't have the skill set. They don't have the drive. And some of them don't get help. So then they become so depressed, so shut down, so full of all these other feelings that they can't do some of the things that these few remarkable people can do.
Yeah, a friend of mine, Veronica Valentine, she's an attorney, she's a mentor, she's a boss, she's a colleague, she's a lot of things to me, and I have great respect for her, but she is younger than me. She, a few years ago, had her third child, who was a beautiful baby daughter, and she has two sons, and she wanted a daughter, and God gave her a daughter. Sadly, a few weeks after the child was born, and, you know, she took the baby out and was, you know, just so proud of this child and so close and bonded with this child. Within a few months, the child got RSV. And then also when the baby was hospitalized, she had received one vaccination for RSV, but she also developed whooping cough, or pertussis, I think is the formal name, which many years ago was eradicated. But what they have since learned is that you need another shot. You need a booster. And so it is at alarming levels. And her baby died. And when I was told, it was like punching me in the gut. I couldn't believe it. I'd have like three people call me down and call me and see how she was. And the loss of an infant, it really struck me. To this day, it gives me goosebumps. I remember the moment I was told. And it was so painful for her, but she knew in that moment, and I will never forget, it was one of the best speeches I've ever heard at a funeral. We were in church and family members spoke, and she spoke, and she just gave this eloquent speech that I could not have uttered two words of. I would have been sobbing up there. And she knew in the instant when her baby died that she needed to begin a foundation. So she began the Franny Strong Foundation. And she's the president of the Franny Strong Foundation, named after the baby, and the founder of ivaccinate.org. And so probably everybody who's listening has seen the advertisements, not knowing it's her foundation. But she's raised, I think, over $10 million in a relatively short time and brought awareness and has literally saved probably thousands and thousands of lives. And just getting the message out there that not only do children need to be vaccinated, but everybody around babies needs to be vaccinated, or you just need to not visit the baby until you are vaccinated or they have all their shots. It's so important. And had she known, you know, she would have made sure everybody that was around her baby was vaccinated, but the word wasn't out there. So she's been instrumental in saving lives, getting the word out there in terms of the education and what it means and how you save lives doing that. And then I know you've got people, but I got to just mention Michael McKissick, who he is a great human being. He was a guy who always fixed. He's a carpenter, painter. He does everything and just learned it from the time he was a little boy, the craftsmanship from his father and grandfather. And so he had children and a wonderful family and wife. And he used to bring his son, named after him, Michael, with him. And so I knew him. Well, when Mikey was 23, he was shot. No one's been arrested for it. Probably no one will ever be arrested for it. But he lost his son, and he turned that pain, like Veronica, into a foundation called Mikey 23 Foundation. And what he does is he takes at-risk kids, any age, at-risk kids, and he teaches them the trades, and he fixes up these old dilapidated houses or homes that weren't taken care of that are donated or that the foundation buys. And from the ground up, they build these houses. And he's taking these kids from the street who don't have a chance to finish school, who don't have anything. They're at risk in multiple ways. And he teaches them how to be men or women, how to survive, how to earn a dollar that is earned a taxpayer dollar, not a stolen dollar, how to stay away from the streets and drugs and bad people, how to really, you know, honor yourself. And he's teaching these people to be successful in life and in everything they do. And he's doing that in honor of his son, who didn't live, who didn't survive, but he wants all these other kids to survive. Very much like Veronica, who took her grief and turned it into a foundation to save other babies. And they just astonish me because they took their pain and made it into power and safety for others.
And you know what I feel like? I feel like what it does for them is it keeps the life of her baby or his son almost like that, like so alive still, because it's almost like there's a constant reminder that this person is no longer here, but it's not in a despairing way. It's in a way that's about action, and I can't bring my baby back, but here's what I can do for other families to prevent that. Or I can't bring my son back, but I can help other families who have kids that are at risk. So it, you know, sometimes when I think about how do people do that? How do you go from being in your worst nightmare to literally saving lives? How do you do that? And as you're talking about both of them, I almost wish they were here because I want to ask both of them, how does that help you? Like, tell us, like, what does that do for you? How does that help you in those moments where you feel gut-wrenching pain or your grief makes you feel inconsolable? And I think I kind of can understand it, because I think what happens for people is they take the traumatic loss and it becomes their life's meaning and their life's work. When we were talking today about doing this show, I was telling you, and I don't know a lot about these parents, but I had come across this podcast. It's called Once Shattered, Picking Up the Pieces. Linda Mazur is the co-host, and her daughter died of anorexia. I came across a post a few weeks ago. One of my colleagues was a guest on her show. I read the title and I thought, oh my goodness, like, how does she do that? And what she does is she has started an organization for family members who have kids with eating disorders. She has support groups. So she doesn't just do this podcast. They wrote a book, and I'll make sure to post it in the notes. And I think to myself, how do people do that? But you know what I think? I think there are people who have what I would call ego strength. This is what the word resilience is about. We did a show in the very beginning of season one. You and I did a show about resilience, and that's what you're describing. You're talking about taking the worst of our experiences and making that our life's meaning. That doesn't mean that you have to do it 24 hours a day. That's not what I mean by that. I imagine that these two people that you're describing, these two foundations, they do other things. They don't just do stuff for their foundation, right? They have friends. I don't know if they have jobs.
Right. You know, they are fully present for their families. They are fully present for their community and for their friends, and they're extraordinary people, extraordinarily strong, but they both believe in God. They both believe in family and community and how we are all connected. And they keep the memory of their loved one alive through these foundations, knowing that others are living and that they are honoring their children in that way. And it's a double-edged sword, because my heart bleeds for both of them, but it also, I'm a biggest cheerleader for both of them, because I don't know that I would have that strength. And I see and feel their strength. I mean, you don't just see what they're doing. You feel their strength and love from here to the moon and back. You know, it's really an incredible feat when they can take their grief and pain and turn it into love forward.
And I think it's part of what helps them become advocates versus criminals. You were saying last week how sometimes people take their anger. Maybe you said that today. I don't remember.
But I see it. Yeah. I've said it many times, but yeah, I see it all the time. I'm sure you see it too.
Yeah. And what I see is more what Linda dealt with her daughter. I see people taking their grief and their shock and their despair and their PTSD out onto themselves and their bodies. So we both see it. We just see it in different ways. And I guess one of the things that I'm thinking is you're talking about these two people that you're talking about, these two different foundations. I'm curious, what was it that got them to start? Like, why did she start that foundation? Did she decide to start that a week after she lost her baby? Was this something that she started years later?
No, she knew in the instant that her child died that it was for a purpose, and she would make her child known this dilemma, because she learned and she said, how is it? I've got a law degree. I'm educated in the world. I know all these things, and I didn't know about this whooping cough, that you need another shot, that the people around babies need another shot. And I'm going to educate the world so this never happens again. And this will bring meaning to the tragedy that I'm suffering right now. And she, it was like a blast from God saying, do this now. And I think it saved her. And I just never have seen anyone at any funeral, and I've been to many, never have I seen anyone so strong, powerful on top of it while they're grieving. I can't even explain it.
Well, you know what it probably saved her from too, when you talked about your grandfather and that part of you that was thinking, I could have. There was some type of switch in her brain that probably found a way to take what could have been years of guilt and self-blame, because she's saying like, she didn't know. And I knew, I'm a lawyer and I'm a this and I know that, but why didn't I know this about vaccines? So there was something inside of her, I think, that found a way, because guilt about somebody's death, especially when it's your child, I've seen that destroy people.
But you know, she didn't blame anybody. I think sometimes the blame and the grief and all of that partner together to destroy people, but she didn't blame the doctor for not telling her. She didn't blame society for not telling her. She didn't blame herself for not knowing. She said, I'm going to teach the world, and she's doing it.
It's amazing. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're talking about this, because if you're out there and you're somebody that has been through a loss and it resonates what we're talking about, that's one of the things that you can work on. You can say to yourself, how can I take some of this pain and grief and make change out of it? What can I do with all this? Because again, grief can consume us. Most of us, if we're adults, have lost something or someone. I don't think I know anybody at this age that hasn't gone through something pretty awful. You know, like they say with trauma, even though that word is kind of overused, by the time you're in your 40s and 50s and 60s, you've probably experienced some type of trauma, whatever the heck that means. But to be able to have a conversation about the power that comes from dealing with and facing our losses, because as humans, we do what we can to avoid grief. People go to extraordinary levels. Like I was saying earlier in the show, not avoiding anything or anyone that reminds us of our past. I mean, this is something that I can relate to, because for years I couldn't drive down certain roads. I couldn't go to certain places because I didn't want to remember anything about being a kid. And it became a hassle, because if I can't drive down certain roads, but I got to go to work and that's how I get to work, you know, you have to get to the point where you can just say, I've got to be able to do this. And I think it's in being able to channel our grief and our fear and the part of us as humans that want to avoid, and finding ways to face it, but in a way that's not traumatizing, reliving somebody dying. Like this woman, I don't know her, but I think, gosh, how does she get that image of her little tiny infant passing away? What she's doing is she's doing other things.
Yeah, she turned her pain into positivity and power, not just for herself, but for others, which, you know, really helps settle her that, you know, this happened for a reason. My daughter was born to give life to others. And I think, you know, that's such a bountiful message.
And you know what I think about when I think about both of the people that you're talking about? We will definitely post all these links in the show notes. I'm thinking all the support and connections she makes, or they both have, as a result of these foundations. When you put yourself out there and you speak about something, you will connect with people that you would never have met if you stay in your room and lock the door. So that's one of the things I'm thinking about for both of them. All the people that come into their lives as a result of their foundations, all the people that can affirm their experience and validate when they're struggling. That when I think about Linda and her husband, I think I'm sure there are times when it's intolerable that they lost their daughter to something like an eating disorder, which some people would say that's a preventable death, even though I don't look at it like that. But I think to myself, probably one of the things that helps them is talking to people who have survived their eating disorder. It probably brings them some comfort to know that not everybody that has an eating disorder will die from it. And even though it doesn't bring their daughter back, it's a way to honor their daughter's death. And it's a way to honor maybe things that they couldn't do for their daughter or they didn't know.
Right. And, you know, I think the message really is that you don't have to start a foundation. You don't have to start a podcast or write a book, but think about your pain and what you're going through. Get help when you need it, but also it would be great. You don't have to start a foundation, but, you know, talk to a child who's lost a parent, talk to a grandmother who's lost a grandchild or a child. We all don't die in a certain order like we should. Things happen. There's accidents and cancers and, you know, people of all ages die. But if you've gone through it and you got through the loss and whatever helped you, help your neighbor, help your friend, because like you said, everyone's going to experience this, especially as you get older. I know dozens and dozens of people who I hope are with God and I can say hello again. But, you know, it does help to talk to, like, for example, children or young people who've lost someone, because I was there and I wasn't heard, I wasn't seen, I wasn't listened to. And it helps just to have somebody to talk to. So if you don't want to start a foundation, you don't have to. I'm not saying you have to, but you can talk to others and help them through their pain.
And maybe again, as we are getting closer to the end, we can talk for a minute about the holidays and things people can do to have those losses be part of the day, but not in a way that's going to make them feel depressed, but maybe more in a way that's going to make them feel comfort and supported. I was talking to one young woman that I've known for a while, and she's about to get married and she's having the time of her life. She is so excited. I mean, she's adorable. Her eyes are like lightning bolts when we talk about her wedding. But then when I say to her, but how do you feel about, like, what's happening with your dad? How do you feel? Her dad passed away 2 years ago and she's in her mid-20s. He should not have died so young. And the second I bring up, even just say your dad, she gets all full of tears. I can feel her sadness. And one of the things that we were talking about is at the wedding, she's going to have a table in his honor, like a table with pictures and different things that remind her that even though her dad's not here, she's going to bring him to the wedding. So when we were talking in the session about, like, I was checking in because she doesn't bring it up. She's like, you know, doing that thing, like she's sort of avoiding, which is, I mean, that's what we do, but she's also in therapy. So obviously there's a part of her that wants and knows she needs to talk about it. When we started talking about the table at the wedding, she started smiling again. I mean, she was crying. There were tears coming all through her eyes, but she was also smiling.
Yeah, because she's bringing him alive for the wedding. I know at my own wedding, I wanted my grandfather there, and I just pictured him sitting there. I knew exactly what suit he would wear. I knew exactly what his face would look like. And so I really knew he was there, and I actually felt his presence. I wasn't over fixated on it or anything, but I knew, and I sort of had prepared myself for he's not going to be there, but, and I could actually visualize him, and I practiced visualizing him, and I know he was there. And during holidays, I always make sure that there's a couple of foods that he enjoy that I enjoy. And then I remember those smells come back, our conversations come back, and we will have great conversations laughing about one thing or another that happened when we were kids or when we were with them. And it really feels like they're there. So, you know, you need to really honor their presence during the holiday, not be sad that they're not there. Just know that they are there and bring them alive in whatever way you can. Sometimes it's just a Christmas ornament or a meal, or, you know, wearing some stupid pair of socks that they always made fun of you wearing, or, you know, any stupid little thing. But that means that they are there. And then I think it's really important, whether it's Christmas or Thanksgiving or any day of the week, honestly, is to make sure that you have some kind of positive affirmations. I always looked in the mirror and said, you'll be okay. You are okay. And, you know, there's things you can say like, I am capable. I choose to heal myself. I choose to not be broken. I am better for having known you. I carry your love with me everywhere. My love is with you, but I feel your love. I'm resilient. I am powerful. I'm resourceful. You know, those kinds of things. I can ask for help. And I smile when I think of you. When it rains, I remember the time that, and it makes me happy. You know, those kinds of powerful affirmations, I know they've helped me throughout my life. And I think people can say, oh, that's kind of stupid, but it's not stupid. Try it. Look in the mirror, look in the light in your eyes and say something positive about the one that you're grieving every single day. And not so that you wallow in it, but so that you honor you getting better and them being with you still in a different way. They're still with you. They're just in a different way.
And maybe think about what they would say if they saw you saying that in the mirror. They certainly wouldn't say to you, that's stupid. What are you doing? They would say, good for you for taking that moment to really affirm yourself. So you need to picture that person nodding back and going, I hear everything that you're saying. And like, I agree 100%.
Yes. And you can say things like, I release my feelings of isolation. I release my feelings of grief. And they're going to be in your background saying, yes, you know, and you can imagine them there because that's what they want for you. They're going to be your cheerleader when you say, you know, I release my feelings of terror. I release my feeling of shock. I release my feeling of trauma, anxiety, whatever you've got going on. And it's something small, but it's free. It only takes a few seconds. And if you do it enough, you know, it will help.
It really does help, actually, because these are words that you internalize and these are words that you live by. So I feel like, I know we're just about at the end. I feel like maybe it would be helpful for the people listening to write down some of the suggestions that you are making in terms of the affirmations. This is a great journal. This is a great journal exercise to write down. I remember when it was raining, so-and-so said this, or I remember at Christmas, my grandpa's favorite food was this, and to write it down and to talk about it with people. And like you said, to have those things be part of the holiday, you know, I think it's an amazing way to just be able to be in your grief without it feeling so, so sad. You can be sad, but you can also laugh, be happy. You can do everything at the same time.
Well, and you can do things like I tell myself, you know, I hear my inner child, and my inner child was loved, is still loved, and is healed.
I mean, that's a wonderful way to wrap up the show and help people manage with losses that feel intolerable and get through another year of holidays and know that more losses will be coming because that's just a part of life. But if we can find ways to manage the feelings, to support each other, and to take again some of that pain and transform it into something that's about action, we'll be okay.
Yeah, and never be afraid to ask for help. In fact, always ask for help when you need it. And I think that, and I say this a lot to you, Sherry, but I really believe it. I say it to people on the bench. It's okay to talk to a friend, a relative, a parent, whomever you have, but they can only go so far in their empathy. And sometimes they get pissed off, literally, because you've mentioned something too many times and their comment is, aren't you over it yet? You know, and there's, like I said earlier, and like we always talk about, there's no time limit. So make sure that you are contacting. And if you don't know someone, ask your doctor, ask a friend, get a referral for a good trauma therapist. There is nothing wrong with seeking help. And it's a sign of strength. And it shows even yourself, but it shows the rest of the world that you are enjoying your life. You want to enjoy it. You want to live. You want to be better. You want to learn how to deal with this. And you just need some help. And everybody needs help now and then. See, I just call Sherry.
I call you too sometimes. Or I definitely, sometimes I call, I go to the trees and I talk to the trees. I definitely talk a lot to my cats. Listen, whatever you got to do to feel heard. And sometimes when help isn't accessible because I'm working or you're on the bench or, you know, my therapist is in a session with another client, there's always help out there and there's always resources. So we will be sure to list those resources on the notes so that you have places you can go if you need help.
And just always know there's always hope.
This was an amazing conversation, and I wish for you and everybody out here a safe and peaceful and happy holiday season.
And just don't worry about the calories. Have a feast and some fun. We wish you well. Until next time, this is Warrior Women Speak.
See you next time.
Next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for joining us today on Warrior Women Speak. It truly is an honor to be able to sit down with Judge Aquilina and have such meaningful conversations. Stay tuned. Each Monday, we will be releasing new episodes in the hopes that we will inspire, uplift, and instill hope. be sure to subscribe now to @WarriorWomenSpeak. Until next time.